All right, good afternoon. I don't know when you're listening to this, everybody, but yeah, thanks for joining us here. We got Brian Berard on the show today, and it's funny, Brian, when I do interviews every week, and you never know what you're going to get, and I do research because I'm just such a studious guy. I had no clue that you have the backstory that you have. You know, obviously, you're a famous hockey player. I knew you growing up. I was living in St. Catharines. You played for the Leafs. I hated you because I hate the Leafs. But then I started digging in. I'm like, holy crap. You got some stories, man. Like, some actual legit, just dramatic stories. And obviously, the eye. Everybody talks about that. I'm buddies with Hossa. Everybody knows that happened. But even coming out of juniors, I didn't know you were drafted by the Senators. I had no clue.
Yeah, my Chris had some good ups and downs for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't know how much you want to get into because I know a lot of my audience and listeners might not know you because I skew young. I'm such a cool hip millennial. So let's just go back. You were taken number one overall in 1995, and you're coming out of Detroit, the junior Red Wings, and I want to get into that too, then to the Whalers, why that name change happened. But
yep. You
get picked by the Senators after having an incredible year. You guys win the Mem Cup, and the Senators take you. What happens? Because nowadays, number one overall, you walk right into the show. And that happened when you were growing up too. Why didn't they want you on the team?
And we actually got beat by we got lost in the Mem Cup finals. We got beat by good old Iggy and Doan. We lost to Camels. Yeah. The Camels crushed us. They were in their own barn and they beat us like 8-1 in the finals. 94-95. Yeah, we lost to Camels in Kamloops. We beat Brandon in the semis. That was Caber and those Caber, Wade Redden. And then we got beat up bad by Kamloops, but they were loaded. They had Tucker, Doan, Aginlus, Jason Strudwick, Jason Holland. They had a bunch of guys. Good team. But anyway, long story short, I got drafted first overall. It was in Edmonton. You know, we didn't know we were going first overall, but that day we kind of had a pretty good idea we were going to. It was going to happen. You know, all my family was there and stuff. And really, it had nothing to do. I got a bad rap early on. It was you know, American kid. You know, they thought it was another like Lindros that I didn't want to play in Canada or things like that. It was not true. I played for the Leafs, probably my favorite team. It just, when I got to the organization, my first NHL training camp, you know, 18 years old, that, you know, for me, it was not an ego thing, but I wanted to be that guy that's drafted first overall that came in and played at 18. So we went to camp and they, you know, the organization was a mess, but they had guys like Alexander Day, Bonk, Yashin, you know, they had some good young players, but that time the organization was a mess financially. They sent me back to junior. Basically it was kind of, you know, both we left there and I kind of told my agent, I said, this locker room and this organization's a mess. Let's go back to junior. I was easily probably would have been top four defenseman on that team. And I was the first guy under rookie salary cap as well. So it was only an $850,000 salary. I shouldn't say only, but, you know, and they just didn't want to pay me. So I went back and was like,
what?
Yeah, which was crazy. So it was kind of just, it was a bad taste in my mouth. We went back to junior. At that time, my agent was Tom Laidlaw with IMG, you know, with Eddie Mio and Mike Barnett and stuff. So we had a little bit of juice, that's for sure. So we just went back to junior and then basically, you know, said we wanted to get traded. And long story short, Mike Milbury started showing up to a bunch of my games and you know, pulled that deal. It was pretty much a swap, but it was a big deal. It was a three-team trade. It was with the Panthers, Florida, Ottawa, and Islanders. So there's players going all over the place, but basically it was just a swap between me and Redden.
So you just fire hosed us with a lot right there. So
sorry about that.
Slow down, Brian. How many coffees have we had today?
Jeepers. I will. Just a couple Addies. No, I'm just
Yeah,
kidding.
Seriously, you're ripping here. So go back to the camp. So you get in. When you say it just wasn't a good – and now they're doing fine. I know Chris Neal, he said their organization is good. But back then, new franchise, trying to learn the ropes, trying to figure out what's going on. What is that, probably 10 years into their – 5 years? I don't know how long they've been in Ottawa, but – what do you mean by they just were not?
It's just a mess. Yeah. It's unfortunately because the big John Ferguson is the one that drafted me too, who was a great guy. But Randy Sexton at that time was a GM. I don't know if it was under new ownership, but they just had a new building being built. For me, it was more the locker room. I mean, they had some quality older guys, that, you know, Dennis Vial and some tough guys like that.
Yeah,
but
I like Dennis. Tough
as nails. But they had some guys that just, you know, again, Dig, Bonk, Yashin. It was just a weird locker room. And then the organization was just kind of pulling – It was Bruce Garriott, I believe, that's still, I believe he's still a reporter. He kind of, kind of basically off record told us what was going on in the front office, myself and my agent. And we just didn't think it was a right fit for, a young kid, 18, 19, coming up. And it ended up working out because going to the Islanders, obviously getting traded to the Islanders, we had a bunch of young players. So it worked out good for me.
Yeah, and that year they actually had three head coaches, and looked like you made the right decision because they were a complete disaster. But their defense was awful. I would have thought you would probably be 1-2.
That's I knew I was in the top four for sure. So I'll be honest, my ego was hurt a little bit. I thought I could play and I wanted to play it. In the NHL is 18. There's not too many guys that get to do that. So it was a mess. And I just went back to junior, which we talked about a little bit before, but offline. But that's when we became Detroit Junior Red Wings, and then Mike Ilitch and Karmanos, who bought the Hartford Whalers, was our owner, CompuWare's owner. They got in a fight, so we got kicked out of the Joe Louis Arena.
That's funny.
So we were no, yeah, it was just a probably owners' egos again in the NHL. And so we became the Detroit Whalers. So we got stuck playing out of good old Oak Park, the old CompuWare's shit rink. And we played some home games actually out with at that time, the Detroit Vipers. I don't know if you remember the Vipers, the IHL, but they played out where the Pistons played. So we played half our home games out there too, which was
On the
nice.
hills. That's funny. And then you get traded. You force your way out. So how does that work? Because typically, not typically, even to this day, you're a very valuable piece to the Ottawa Senators. I'm guessing you soured on them, and they may be soured on you, and your agent was working behind the scenes to say, let's get this done.
Yeah, it was just both the same. I think we both agreed what happened, and it kind of happened ugly, just behind the scenes ugly. Not nothing, nothing grudge or anything like that. But it was just that organization was just a little bit. I think they knew they were in turmoil too, so it was kind of and that worked out great for them. They picked up Redden, who had a great career, so it worked out both ways.
And it's funny that you get traded for this guy who was number two overall, and he didn't make the team out of camp either with the Islanders. So he went back to juniors. You guys probably played each other maybe throughout that. You were the OHL. Maybe you didn't play him. But
Yeah, no, he didn't. Yep.
have you ever talked to him and be like, buddy, like what happened? Like, how does that happen? Because you would have think he would have made the Islanders out of camp too.
Yeah, we actually never had that conversation. But like you said, your buddies with Hossa, after the eye injury, I know jumping forward here, but after that, the horrific eye injury, and it was just bad luck. Reds actually brought Hossa to the hospital the next day in
Oh,
Ottawa.
no way.
Yeah, so he brought, which was an emotional day for all three of us, to be honest with you. But definitely Hossa, who felt awful, and then obviously myself, who thought I was going to lose my eye and lose my career. So it was a tough day, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, before we get to that, man, way to bring us down, Brian. Unbelievable.
I know,
Just let's
right?
stay where we're at. Because I'm still blown away by you're an 18-year-old kid and you got the balls to say, you know what? This isn't going to work. Like, because typically, an 18-year-old kid, you come in, you want to make sure everybody's happy and everybody likes you. How do you have that? How do you have that to do that? Because I would be scared, to say anything.
I think the reason why, I shouldn't say the reason why I did it, but the reason why I was okay with it is because the locker room was a mess too. If that had leadership and some younger guys like Brian McCabe or Bertuzzi, when I walked in with the Islanders, we had a great young mix of guys. Scott Lachance, Ziggy Palfy, Kenny Johnson. We had a good group of younger players. So as soon as I walked in there, I was like, this was almost
It's
an
better.
A yeah, it was almost an amen kind of thing where I knew it was going to be, obviously, especially, it had nothing again, nothing to do with Canada. I went to Toronto, but I got a bad rap right away. A lot of,
Well, I tell you
I
what,
think
Brian,
people.
you keep saying nothing to do with Canada, and it makes me think that it has a lot to do with Canada.
And not at all, but I was bummed because that's why obviously I played in the OHL, and then when I got that kind of rap or that was the rumor going around, that's what affected me. That kind of made me upset, pissed me off.
How was that in the media? Because nowadays you'd be killed. It'd be all like during my All-Star thing,
Yeah.
every time I picked up a paper, you would have been like front page for months if that would have happened nowadays. Was it still kind of not quite that bad?
It went bad because I mean
Did
every
it?
time after that, every time I played in Ottawa, every time I touched the puck,
Oh,
they
that's
booed
funny.
me. Yeah, it was great. I mean, they booed me even back in junior. When I'm back in junior playing the OHL, playing the 67s, they were booing me. So that was good. That was kind of a fun part of it. And then ironic, I keep jumping forward on you, but it was ironic because booed me, and then obviously the eye injury happened in Ottawa, which was kind of a freaky thing as well.
Kind of
So
fitting.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, it's. I mean, you can look at it. I don't know if you want to say karma or something like that, but it was definitely in
No,
that. But it
if you're,
definitely,
yeah.
come back. Yeah,
It
I
is
didn't look
funny
at it like
though.
that, but it's kind of funny that it happened that way.
So yeah, you go to the Islanders, and again, this is the team that I thought you were drafted by, and you just tear it up. What kind of player were you? Because you're not your typical. You see the puck movers these days. They're the Cale Makars, these Quinn Hughes, the small, shifty guys. You're a big dude. You're 6'1". You're 200 pounds. What was Describe your game to me.
Yeah, I played at 6'1", 205 pretty much until I got hurt. But yeah, I mean, my game was definitely all offensive. Ran power plays. I mean, my assets were my speed, my skating, obviously, being able to get up the ice pretty quick and get back just as quick. As every offensive defenseman, you kind of get a bad rap as being. Being weak defensively, and I think that happened early on. I never really had to, I definitely had some weaknesses in my game back then, and I need some good coaching. Bill Stewart actually helped me with the Islanders early on, just to kind of my own zone and things like that too. But offensive run and power plays was definitely my game. And then, I usually, when I was going good, I usually played anywhere from, 20 to 25 minutes a game. So just kind of all over the place.
When you're obviously an elite offensive guy, who is your preferred partner? Because you look at, they always try to go super offensive, really stay at home. Like Makar's got Taves, Duncan had Siebes, Pronger and Niedermeyer. Who is your ideal partner when you were at your peak?
I had Scotty Lachance, I think, was great. Good stay home guy. But I'll kind of, I bet you I'll throw a wrench in a lot of people's. My best partner offensively that I put up my offensive numbers and probably best defensively was Stefan Robida in Chicago. Yeah,
Really?
Robida. Yeah, we played. He was a right-hand shot, and that's kind of when I first moved to my left-hand side because of my eye injury. I always
Yeah.
played my offhand, and then I moved to the left side. But we had good communication, and really he used me a lot in the point. It was probably my best point per game outing with the Blackhawks before I got hurt there in Columbus. But he was just a solid guy, good communication, and he was probably my best D partner. I had some good guys though. I had Karpatsov obviously with with Toronto, with the Leafs, Yuskevich as well, a couple of stay home guys. So definitely, they'd always try to put me with a stay home guy. But Robida was a little offensive as well, so I
Yeah.
like playing with that because we moved the puck pretty well, D to D, back to D, things like that, breaking the trap, the good old trap era. I would say he was my best partner.
No kidding. Yeah, that's shocking. Because yeah, you wouldn't think he would be a nice part, because he's such a shutdown, stay at home, shop blocking type of guy. I wouldn't assume he'd be good to play with. But there you go. I
Yeah,
learned something
he
every.
was
So
for
you're
sure.
with the Islanders and you're tearing it up. And good, like you said, good young team, lots of promise there. You're not having too much success, but I'm looking at the ages of everybody here. It's 21, 22, 23 years old, and you got this group. I'm guessing we're going to grow together. We're going to build something good. And all of a sudden, like you win the Calder, you're flying. Like everything is good, right? Did
Well,
you get a sense it was not good, or am I wrong?
no, I thought it was great. Just Mike Milbury had a midlife crisis. That's pretty much it. I mean, I love Mike still today, but I was like his redheaded stepchild. But we got along good, and he just tested guys. But something happened to him where, I don't know what it was, but he just started trading away everybody. I mean, he started trading away McCabe and Bertuzzi first for Trevor Linden, which really made no sense. Then obviously he just traded Ziggy Palfy. Then he, obviously we were struggling. Tommy Salo was struggling a little bit, started struggling, needed a goaltender. He traded away me for Felix Botman. It just, he started getting rid of everybody. And the worst part about it, he had early draft picks. So he was bringing in, young studs like Ricky DiPietro. And then he brought in Luongo. We had Eric Brewer back on D. We had a lot. Our D would have been unreal. Our top six would have been solid. We would have had a really good team if we would have kept us together for another 3 to 5 years.
It would have been deadly, an absolute deadly. And he lost every. I see. Unlike you, I don't like Mike Milbury. And during my All-Star thing, the guy
Lot of guys don't, yeah.
tore me up left and right. Like he was just my biggest just opponent on this. And does it frustrating for you when you look at this roster and you go, "Damn! Like we could have had like a solid team if Dum Dum didn't start trading everybody. Like you have talent, you got youth, you got goaltender. Like
Yeah,
it would have been fantastic."
we had toughness too. We had Mick Vokoda, Richie Pilon,
Pilon was the scariest guy I've ever played against.
Kenny Bollinger at his top game was one of the tougher guys until Laus knocked him out in Florida. But
Oh,
other than
Pauly.
that, I mean, yeah, he we had a tough team too. We had a team. I mean, we definitely did.
Hell
And then
yeah.
Milbury just kind of ran with it and ruined it, unfortunately.
goes full retard and trades everybody on the roster and loses every single trade. Like the Ashton trade is insane. But anyways, moving past that, when he trades you mid-season, how does that conversation go? Because this is, you win the Calder 2 years before. The next year, you have an even better season, less games, same amount of points. And that season with the Islanders, you're flying. You got 15 points, 30 games. The team's playing well. And then you get dealt to the Islanders. What do you say to him when he says you're trading me? Because, like, what are you, 22 years old?
Yeah, I got dealt to the Leafs. I was in Montreal. I was out with a groin strain. And I got a call from, no idea, I was actually shopping, walking around Montreal during the day. I think I got hurt the night before or so, but I was walking around and I got a call from a Sherwood rep in Toronto and said, you just got traded to the Leafs. And I was like, no effing way. There's not a chance. So I hustled back to the hotel, run into the lobby. There's a couple of guys sitting there. I think Bill Stewart, a couple of the guys were sitting there, and they're like, you better get up to that room. And they might be too late. So I went right to Milbury's room. I went right to his hotel room, knocked on the door, opened the door, and he said, you're too late. You traded to the Leafs. He goes, I needed a goaltender. And that was it. That was our conversation. I never went back to Long Island. I had the good old moving company, move my stuff. I flew right to Toronto, and then my career began as a Leaf.
You're too late. That's what he said.
He said that. Yeah, he used to test us, or like, Milbury's stories. But we had older guys, but we had good leadership. But a lot of those guys were towards the end of their career, not on big contracts.
Yeah.
So they didn't want to ruffle feathers. So a lot of times Milbury would just end of my rookie year, we pull in and we get in our equipment and stuff, and there's no hockey bags. There's all trash bags in front of our lockers. And Milbury said we weren't allowed to take our hockey bags home for the summertime. So I was like, this is not the NHL. This is effing bullshit. So I stormed right up to Milbury. Rookie year. I stormed right up to Milbury's GM office and said, Mike, what the? And he was waiting for me. He said, I knew it was going to be you bitching. He's like, go down and tell Joe McMahon you can take your hockey bags. That's the games he played. He just would always test us. And unfortunately, it was kind of, I grew balls early enough to kind of stand up for my teammates and do what's right.
What do you learn if you're the GM by that? You go, I'm going to test them. I'm going to learn who's going to be mad and want their equipment bag.
Yeah, it's crazy.
They're all going to end up hating you.
Exactly. It was a tough time for sure, and tough time for him as well. But, if I see Mike now, we're fine. I kind of laugh about it now, but it just, I'm sure he, same thing. I mean, he looks at stuff like we all do. We do some dumb stuff. You live and learn.
Yeah, no, he's still an idiot. I don't like him. But so you go to Toronto and you go from an up and coming team to a team that's primed. Like they're win now mode. You got Matt Sundin, Stumpy Thomas. You have good young players and Mike Sullivan. They get you this solid defenseman that they can grow with this group. How excited are you? But not too excited, because I heard you don't like Canada.
That's for sure. I was more than excited once I got there in Toronto. We had right when I got there, I mean, we were a run and gun team. We had probably the best skating team, I think, that year.
Yeah.
That's the year, that was probably my only shot that I thought, that my best shot and only shot to win the Stanley Cup, I felt, looking back at my career. We had the Russian Mafia, so we were tough as nails as far as blocking shots, on the back end. We had some skilled guys, obviously Matt Sundin, Freddie Modine. We had the Swedes. We were like an all-nation team, to be honest with you. Yeah. We had toughness, Chris King, Ty Domi. We had our goaltender, Curtis Joseph. On the back end, guys still could skate, like Sylvain Cote. We were running gun. We just choked, and I say this all the time, we choked against Buffalo. We had Buffalo. Hasek was hurt the first two games, and we opened up at home, and we went 1-1, and we lost to Buffalo in six. And we would definitely, I thought we were a better team, but Hasek again stole one from us.
Well, yeah, and you finished your regular season like way ahead of them too. Which is
we ended up, I think we overlooked Buffalo. We're looking for that Dallas running gun matchup in the finals.
Gosh, that would have been incredible. So you're flying high, you're playing in Toronto, and we're gonna get to it, because the next season, is that the next year where you get hurt?
Yeah, exactly. The following season was right in March, pretty much right before the end of the season. I got hurt in March 11, 2000.
Oh,
I'm aging myself now, but yeah, March 11, 2000, I got hurt with the eye.
25 years ago.
That's crazy.
Isn't that wild? Yeah. Man, we're not that old, Brian.
Yeah, exactly.
Just forget about it. So I don't want to dig too much, because I think it's well documented. I don't know. But how and it's a stupid, you felt terrible. I saw an interview where he said you knew right away because your eye just went black.
Like, correct. Yeah, I knew with the blood, with all the blood and everything. And obviously, I think the main goal was to try to save the eye that night. You know, woke up again in the hospital. I thought my career was done easily for, I would say, 6 months or so. I had, you know, well, to make it into a nutshell, but it was like 7 surgeries to fix the retina. Then once I thought I could make a comeback, we were trying to get as much vision as I could out of it. But that was kind of it wasn't working, which was fine with me because if I would have got, and I tell people this now, if I would have got more vision in my eye, I wouldn't have been able to play because their brain, it's weird. The brain works weird ways. So if I get, you kind of get two images in your brain. If my eye kind of is working a little bit, mm-hmm. a lot of times I'll just kind of close it down. It's funny. If I wake up hungover and stuff like this, I get actually more. So it has to do with blood pressure. I get more vision out of the eye, and then it kind of screws me up more because my equilibrium is more off. I get almost two images to the brain. So it was good the way I had it. You know, I was able to come back and play 6-7 more years with the one eye. Obviously, wasn't ever came back to once the player I was, especially defensively. Offensively, I think I put up even better numbers offensively, but defensively, you know, I definitely wasn't the player I once was.
Which I tell you what is frustrating for me because, you know, I played defense and I never got any points and I had 20/20 vision. It's very annoying to look at your stats, but going back to the eye, yeah, I got a daughter and she has to put a patch over her eye for 3 hours a day because the other eye isn't connecting to the brain. And it's weird to see the improvement where you force that eye to work and all of a sudden her vision has just gotten better over the last year. And she's wore a patch every day for 3 hours for last year. And it's crazy the connections the brain makes to it. So I don't know.
The eye is very difficult. Let's just put it that way. The eye and the brain together, they still can't figure out that optic nerve piece either. So it's definitely a complicated the brain.
Are you like a genius very on it now? Are you must know everything.
I've been through it. You know, it's definitely, which I love too, because I notice things, or if I pick up things, I'll you know, I look at eyes right away. And I love little kids because they're the most honest you know, human beings ever. And a lot of kids will be like, "What's wrong with your eye? What happened to your eye?" Things like that. So it's cute, you know. And they look at it. So the adults, I can see them like staring at it, almost wanting to ask me. And it's just I don't mind talking about it at all. So it's just better to get it out there.
Well, the innocence of a child is a beautiful
That's
thing.
Great.
Do you have any kids, Brian?
I do not. Not yet. Not yet.
Not yet. Okay. Not there's yet. Still time. Not yet.
Getting up there, but there's time.
You get the eye, and correct me if I'm wrong, Toronto said they would have you back and, you know, let you work your way back in, but you said, no bueno. I want to be a free agent. Let's go. I want some, you know, options. And you went out and you signed with the Rangers. Is that right? You kind of...
That is right. In hindsight, I wish I could take that back because I ran into Pat Quinn and he was pissed. He was upset at me because I did tell him I'd always be a Leaf, but I knew coming back. I mean, I went to the Rangers, but even Rangers is nothing compared to the media in Toronto.
Yeah.
And I figured me coming back, and I knew I was just skating. I knew I wasn't the player I was, and I knew there was going to be a lot of eyes on me if I signed in Toronto with the media and stuff. So I wanted a couple of years to kind of almost start my career over again and get back to. I didn't know what type of player I was going to be. So that's the only reason why I didn't go back to the Leafs, and I thought that was the right decision at the time.
So again, it has nothing to do with Canada, and because this is just feeding into that narrative, Brian, that you don't like Canada. I'm just saying.
Not at all. I love Toronto is my favorite team to play for sure.
Oh, and Ottawa's the best too. No, they're both fantastic. So you want to find your game, right? And you want to kind of hide. So you go and you sign with the New York Rangers because that's a very small market team. It allows you to work into
just,
it.
No. If you look at the players on that team, you'll know why I signed there. I mean, just
well, that's when there was money era. They got Lindros, they got Fleury, they got Brian Leetch, they have Mark Messier. Like, who's who was a free agent? The Rangers used to go out and sign them, and they went and get you. So you go to this
team, the playoffs.
And you missed the playoffs. Yeah, and it was a complete dud. Everybody was just blaming everybody and their brother. How was that though? Because you're a guy coming back. Everybody, like you said, wants to know how you're doing, and you're able to go into this locker room and have just so many luxuries, so many great players to play with. That must have been fun to just look across and see all these Hall of Famers.
It was. And it took the pressure off. I mean, I went out, I was probably, you know, probably a fifth or sixth defenseman on that team. Slats was great with me. You know, patience, I played all 82 games.
Yeah.
There's definitely some nights I probably shouldn't have been in the lineup. Especially with that roster, but the D was like me and Carpa, probably 5-6. So I just was able to get my reps. I mean, that's the easiest way to say it. I was able to get reps, play some hockey, still playing 12, maybe 12 to 50 minutes a game, second power play. So I was able to kind of get, my feet underneath me a little bit. So I thought that was the right decision. It sucked that it was a tough year, obviously, with Theo Fleury. I had a real tough year personally, and some things like that were tough. But, I felt I was able to get my feet under me. And then I signed in Boston, and, I could tell my game was starting to come back, and especially offensively, I was starting to put some points back up.
Yeah, did it take a while? Because like I can't even wrap my head around how hard that would be to go from playing with one eye, basically. How, gosh, and then switching sides even is difficult.
Yeah, well, it definitely took a little time, but again, it's kind of funny, but one of my assets was my vision too, right? My hockey IQ and my vision.
Right,
So
yeah.
that never went away. Obviously, I'd miss, if I explained it, the toughest thing again, defensively or fetching pucks. If you're going back for pucks and one
Yeah.
guy was chasing me, I was good. But if they sent two guys, then I could be in a little bit of trouble. And then I bulked up. I played, it affected probably my quickness a little bit after my injury. I played at probably 215, 218.
Oh,
I just
wow.
figured
Yeah.
that, yeah, I just figured that I needed a little more size because I'd probably get belted a little bit more and kind of want to be a little bit more steady back there.
Did
So
you have a
that's kind
blind
of how it
spot at
was.
all going back or like
Oh, for
checking?
sure. I mean, definitely, obviously then I put the visor on and I came back one funny shift. I was just always bitching about my visor either being too close to my face or, and Leachy always wore a visor. He says, the problem is your nose, just shave down your nose. You'll be all right. Good old Leachy. Doesn't say too many words, but that was one of the funnier ones on the bench that I'll always remember. So, yeah, it was good. Again, I once, no, vision was never there the same, but the peripheral, my right side, I just have to, like I always tell young defensemen today, keep your head on a swivel, right? So that's basically what I had to do.
Oh, gosh, that's got to be impossible. Okay. Yeah, you played great, and then you go to the Bruins next year, another original six. You went on a streak of original six there for a while, and you play great in Boston. Why? And then you go to Chicago the next year, and you play great in Chicago. Why not re-sign with any of these teams?
Yeah, that's what pissed me off, and that's why towards the end of my career I was done with hockey for a while. The politics, obviously, the Bruins are Bruins. They played the old arbitration game, went to arbitration. They lost on purpose, so my salary, got up to 2.5 or 2.8. They didn't want to pay that. They didn't think any other team would come after me, which I was fine signing in Boston for. They didn't even want to give me $2 million. So we're just kind of going back and forth with them, and then Chicago stepped up, paid me the money. And that was the year before the lockout.
Yeah.
Bob Pulford was there. Brian Sutter was there. Me and Brian got along great. Excuse me, put up, but I didn't play many. I think I only played 50 some games this year because I missed the beginning of the season with the holdout. Excuse me.
Yeah.
But I put up some pretty good, really good points,
Oh,
actually,
great
points
numbers.
per
You're almost a
game.
point per game, yeah.
And actually, Pulford, we came in, we did a deal. We did a 3-year deal with the Blackhawks, but couldn't sign it because that was the lockout, 2004. Yeah, so and then good old Dale Talon came in, who I'm still pissed off at today. And then when I see him, I'll let him know. I still haven't seen him, but then and I get along with Dale, but we had a three and I just didn't sign it. We had a 3-year deal for $9 million. Would have loved to stay in Chicago, and he retracted that contract, which I thought was bullshit.
So going back to the brew, so what do you mean he retracted? He just said
He
when
just
he's he just said no?
they fired Pulford, and because I was one of Pulford's guys or whatever,
Yeah.
Dale came in. He wanted to start all over or whatever he wanted to do. He fired Sutter, and then he reneged on my contract, which I thought was
Oh,
bullshit. So
that is
yeah, so that
greasy.
and then I always got along with Doug McClain, who was a great guy in Columbus. So he pretty much signed me to the same contract minus the they did all the however they did the money wasn't the same, but he looked at it as the same, and he did a 2-year deal with me in Columbus. And
Okay.
that's where I just got frustrated more with hockey because I was putting up unreal. I think I got hurt with 40 something games. I almost had a point a game. I think I was up to
Yeah.
13, 14 goals in 40 something games, and then I blew my lower back. And then it sounds like I got a black cloud over my head. I pretty much do. But then the doctors screwed up with that, and they only thought it was one level. So they just operated at L3, L4, and it was both L3, 4, 4, 5. So then I had missed it a whole nother year from that as well. So, and that was
How did
pretty
they
much the
not
end of career.
know or even
Yeah,
check?
it's crazy, crazy. Good old team doctors. So yeah, it was bullshit.
Then
So
they get pissed at
that's.
you when you take it a second opinion.
Yeah, exactly. The good old the doctors, So that's why, especially young kids today, make sure you guys get, you have your rights, especially with the union, to get second opinions and stuff. And if you don't have to use team docs, don't. That's for
Oh, and the
sure.
teams get so mad even if you go like get aspirin from somebody else. They want
Yeah,
total control over you.
it's crazy. No
So
good.
you go back to the Bruins, and I'm guessing Jacobs was still the owner at the time, and he was pulling a lot of the strings. How do they mess up your? You said they lost arbitration on purpose. I never went. Walk me through that. Why did they do that?
That's a great question. I think what they do is there's teams have to. So if they lost arbitration. So I think it was like $2.4, $2.5 million.
So I don't want to jump on you because I want to hear all this. Take me through. How did they lose? Like, what does it mean when they lost arbitration? So you submit a number and...
Yeah, they basically just didn't fight it. So basically, okay. They're supposed to fight for their side of what they think you're worth. The PA fights for the players, to what they think that's worth. It's pretty easy, right? Comparables. So the Bruins didn't put up a fight. The judge awarded me 2.5. And now a team has to offer me a 10% increase on that, or even it might even be more, I don't know the exact rules, to basically sign me. And if they don't, I have to do a deal with the Bruins. So what we're trying to do...
2.5?
Not for that 2.5. They're supposed to give you the 2.5, but if they don't sign you for that 2.5, you become an unrestricted free agent.
Okay.
But a team to sign you has to sign you at a certain number over that 2.5. So I think that year I played for the Blackhawks just under $3 million.
So just say the Hawks didn't offer you that number.
Then I probably have to go back to the Bruins or basically go back to what Bruins wanted me to do is go back to them begging and sign for a lower number is what they wanted to do.
Okay. So they were like, there's no way a team's going to give him 3 million.
Exactly.
He's going to come back. We'll give him $1 million. Basically that's what they were trying.
Exactly. They wanted to give me 1.5 or something like that. 1.5, 1.6, something like that.
And you're coming off a great season with them, like playing great. And they try to pull that crap.
Yep. Yep.
That's crazy. Bruins.
Yeah, they tried that a few times with some players for sure. So
you just have the worst luck when it comes to anything.
It's can be true. Yeah, definitely ups and downs. That's for sure.
I can't believe it. And so
they don't call me Mush for a reason, right?
They call you what? Sorry?
Mush. I'm just kidding. Quoting from Bronx Tale. Good old Mush. Oh,
that's funny. So you go back to the Islanders and you have another good season. And that's the thing. I expect there to be a fall off with your play and your points. I'm sitting here going, you're productive every single season. What's like, you're still a very productive player 10 years after your injury or 7 years, whatever it may be. Why shut it down? Like, why go to Russia? What happened?
The back, the lower back.
The back.
After, okay. Yeah, two lower back surgeries, my lumbar, and it was to get dressed every day, not dressed clothes wise, but to get warmed up for practice every day, it was a grind. And then basically for me, it caused by, I hurt my back shooting pucks. So the shooting was killer for me. And obviously that's part of my game and the power play and stuff. And so I went over to Russia to basically, you know, I could have played in Russia for the next 5, 6 years, made good money. I had to go over for, you know, play 30 games, which I was willing to do. I wasn't scared at all of flying. And then obviously that horrific fatal plane crash with what I lost a bunch of buddies on, obviously played with the Leafs. Couple Russian buddies and then Big Beast, Brad McCrimmon. So after that, I was like, is this worth the money? I knew the planes were old and stuff like that. So I just I came back home and called it quits.
So that's the locomotive plane crash.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Like Korolev, a bunch of good buddies on that
no
flight.
No way. So you were over there when that happened.
Yeah, I was actually the year before I was with the big VDs team, Chekhov with Chris Simon, RIP, great buddy of mine. And then I was signed with Alexander McGillney's team over in Eastern by Siberia, pretty much Amur, AMUR. I was over there when that plane went down, and then I just kind of hopped on the next plane back and said, you know, that's it for my career. I'm done.
So, and I know this is kind of morbid, but the planes were bad. Like, you noticed it when you flew?
They were awful. I mean, we flew, you know, we leave Chekhov, so we'd leave Moscow. We'd fly to, at that time, Omsk, where Yager was playing. It'd be a 9-hour flight. You know, even they don't, at that point, I think hopefully it's changed now, but they didn't de-ice. You know, the planes weren't even big enough. A lot of our hockey bags would be like on the back seats of the planes. It just, you know, two seats, two, you know, two and two. It was awful. And that's the one thing I just didn't. I loved playing over there, to be honest with you. It was like the Wild West. It was a lot of fun. But the plane rides and the flying to me were dangerous.
Well, good on you for leaving. But the 1 year that you played, you gooned it up. You were on this team. Like, everybody's fighting. You get 100 PIMs in 25 games. Did you just decide, you know, I'm not going to shoot because the back, I'm just going to start throwing bombs?
No, I didn't want to. I wanted to shoot and pass. It was brutal because Big Chief went over there. Chris went over there. Simon went over there to play some hockey too. And the Russians love the fighting, right? The owners love this. Yeah. So a lot of these young kids were challenging Chief. And I'd be yelling at the kids, like, you don't want a piece of them. And then Chief would snap. And then he'd hurt some of these kids, and then line brawls would start. And a lot of times I'd have to jump in, obviously. So I was just kind of fighting for my teammates and fighting for Chris because guys were trying to jump him, and it just and our owner loved that shit. So yeah, I got my ass kicked a couple of times, pretty good. Because a lot of times Chief would drop their tough guy, and then two other guys would jump on him, and then the tough guy would try to go back at Chief, and then I'd get paired with the tough guy, so then I'd have to fight their tough guy. So it was like, thanks, Chief, I appreciate that. But
Thanks,
at least
buddy.
yeah, but he was snappy. He was killing guys over there. He didn't want to fight. He wanted to play. He's on the power play with me.
Oh, no
He wanted to
kidding.
score some goals and stuff. And guys would just, guys would challenge him every game. So it sucked for him.
Nah, that's yeah, and then you retire and
You know
you're
how it
done.
is. Yeah,
Oh,
exactly.
I know how it is. I got offered to go play in Russia when I was done, and my wife was the one who said no way, but I'm kind of glad because I saw what Marasty and them were doing. They had the Oblonsky and Marasty and all that. There were some tough guys over in Russia. I just no thank you. So
They were.
now fast forward to now, and we get this interview scheduled. Somebody coordinates it. I gosh, what's his name? Andrew or something.
Jeff Winchester. Yeah,
Jeff Winchester.
So
And hold on a
go ahead.
second. I'm gonna lead into it. So I get this.
I got you.
I get your email. And it's not, most guys got like, I just did Tage Thompson. It's like Tomer at Hotmail, or, I did Luch. Luch is like mluchich at Gmail. Brian Berard's email is a president at
I hate
such
it.
and
I hate
such. Now, look at,
it.
no, I love Canada and I don't like the email.
No, I
Why?
don't like
So
email.
when you asked for that, you said president with a capital P? Is
I
that
did
what
not
you
ask
asked
for
for?
I did not ask for it. I did not.
Oh,
That
yeah.
I swear to my good eye. I swear to God, my good eye. But I started. It's a great story, and it's kind of where I'm at today. Probably about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, a couple of my good buddies, Joffrey Lupul, Scotty Upshaw, and a good buddy, Andy McLaughlin, played at BC. They moved out to Asper during COVID. I went out there for a little shindig, just for a little party. And at that time, I think it was Labor Day. It was a music festival going on. I met Sheldon Wolitzki and his family, Katie Wolitzki, his wife, Katie Wolitzki, and they have five kids under 11. And he's on his second mountain. He's about to exit his company, a big staffing company called the Select Group, but he's about to exit that. And so I saw what he was doing. His second mountain, he started a youth organization called Colorado Extreme about 4 years ago. This will be our fifth year. He wanted to basically provide free hockey from everybody. It's Mid Valley, Don Valley from Aspen. It's 45 minutes. A lot of Latinos, so a lot of people that can't afford hockey. So he wanted to basically start this organization and provide free hockey, free gear for kids. He expected, 60, 80 players. Over 100 plus showed up. We're now at 600 kids with three youth organization. We provide free gear through NHL and Pure Hockey. We did a deal with them. So we basically will fit your kids so they come out for, and skate for free ice time. We're outdoor rinks right now. We have chillers, but we have two outdoor rinks.
Oh,
Our second
awesome.
rink's being built now. So that's why we kind of reach out to you. I'm doing a little tour and podcast about our biggest fundraiser. Sheldon's family is putting in a ton of money, and it's just not sustainable. So we really want to keep a place for kids to play hockey, provide the free gear, the Colorado Extreme in Carbondale. So we do our biggest fundraiser. I'm getting to it. We play our biggest fundraiser of the year. It's called the NHL Outdoor Alumni Game. This year we added the fantasy camp aspect, which is awesome. It's December 11th through the 14th in Aspen. We play basically we open everybody up, big welcome party at Belly Up in Aspen. A lot of people know what that is. Dustin Lynch is performing. Friday's the big fantasy game. The two goaltenders are Lundqvist and Marc-Andre Fleury. So there won't be a lot of goals scored by the campers, but it'll be an awesome experience. We'll have about six NHL guys on each of that team, so the campers will have a blast. And then the big finale game is Saturday at 3 p.m. We play the Avs alumni. There'll be about probably 40 plus NHL guys there, NHL alumnus there. It's a great event. It's all for fundraiser. It's all for the kids, and it's for Colorado Extreme to provide obviously free ice time, free gear, and just have a place for the kids to play. So it's a great cause, and it's for the kids. So if you got, I ask people if they come out or they want to play in the fan, be a fantasy camper for the weekend. We have ex NHL equipment guys coming out. They're going to set up the locker rooms. It's going to be a complete NHL experience. So it's going to be awesome.
That's amazing. And you got some heavy hitters. Like, I know Hank, I played with him with the Rangers. He doesn't do a lot. And to get him to come out is pretty incredible. The same with Marc-Andre Fleury. The guy just retired. You think he'd want to spend some time with his family, but that's crazy. Like,
Yeah,
how do
it's
you
awesome.
get this guy's? Like, it's
It's
nuts.
awesome too, because we have in the mornings guys ski. Sheldon's got 14, 15 snowmobile sleds on top of Ajax Mountain. So we'll give a lot of the donors and some guys some backcountry snowmobiling, which is awesome. It's just an awesome weekend. We have a poker event as well. That's on Friday night. So guys can sit down and drink some beers with each other, bullshit, and play some poker as well. So it's a great event. I think we got four or five Hall of Famers now trying to get Paul Coffey there as well. So you guys like Chelios. Roenick just had a bail on us, unfortunately. Big event, but with the Blackhawks. But we got a lot of top guys. It's a great event. So it's gonna be a lot of fun for the campers.
You need some like all-star MVPs or something. Like something
There
to
you
put
go.
over
There
the
you go.
top, but
I
I don't
invited
know
you. You
if
turned it
there's any
down.
around.
You
What's
turned it
that?
down. I said I invited you, but you turned it down.
It's funny you mentioned that guy had five kids under the age of 11. I have eight kids under the age of 13, so it's tough to get out, Brian, when you're
I get that. Jesus.
dragging all
Good
these
for good
kids.
for you. Good for you.
Brian gives me like a week advance. He's like, "Hey, do you want to come?" I'm like, "Buddy, I need like 6 months in advance to get babysitters lined
We'll
up."
sign you up for next year, because if you guys can come out, you and the wife can come out. To be honest with you, it's a great event for the wives too. All the wives come out, and we do something special because Sheldon Woodsy's wife, it's her birthday,
Oh,
Katie Woodsy's
cool.
birthday, on December 14th. So we make sure that the wives are special too. And if the wives are happy, the guys can come back every year. That's the way we
That's
look at it.
honestly how it works. That's fantastic. So if
It,
someone's listening and they want to go, do they go to a website or what do they do?
it, yeah. If they can go to the website, it's coloradoextreme.org, and they can figure it out. But right now, if you look social media, it's all over the place. You can reach out to me too, obviously at president at coloradoextreme.org. I'm changing that soon though, but please reach out. President at coloradoextreme.org. It'd be great.
The balls on you to say president at coloradoextreme.com is unbelievable. Like, that's such a
Dot
great email.
org, dot org,
Dot
dot
org, excuse me.
org. Exactly. And the best part about it, guys, just so everyone knows too, we're 501c3, so it's a full tax write-off for everybody, donors and players and everything. So it's a big event.
And if you want to do go to the event and be one of the charity is there still spots available or no?
Yeah, for sure. You can just go online, or again, reach out to me, and we'll take care of you.
Yeah, these events are so fun.
Always
I've done them
welcome.
in the past. Like you get to play hockey, you get to drink and hang around with the guys. You do like it's so incredibly fun, and hockey guys are the best. And I'm looking at the lineup
Yeah,
here,
it's awesome.
like you got Fleury, Lundqvist, Quincy, you got Shane O'Brien, you got yourself, Barnaby, John Michael Lyles, Swaggy P is gonna be there.
Yeah, we got a lot of guys that are coming in that are, influencers as well. I'm working on Brad May. We got a bunch of guys that'll come in, so it'll be awesome.
All right. Well, thank you, Brian, for sharing
Yeah,
that with
thanks for having
us.
me.
And yeah, I hope everything goes well. Hopefully, I can make it out there next year. If you just give me a little more time, I think I can make
I
it
will
happen.
for
But yeah,
sure.
anything
Absolutely.
else you want
Awesome.
to pump or push, or you want to
No,
talk about how much you hate Canada or your eye or anything?
that's great. I appreciate it, John. Thank you very much for having me.
All right, everybody. Brian Berard, thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Cheers, everybody.
Thanks, brother. Have a good day.